Okay, so we are here at the ice rink once again. It's Oxford City Stars against the White Link, something Isle of Wight Ferry.
Tigers.
It's Tigers. I thought it was the Raiders earlier on my tweet, so I got it wrong yet again. I always get it wrong because Peterborough Islanders last week.
Peterborough, obviously, big island, and then lots of Tigers on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Never been to Blackgang Chine.
That's it.
I've been to Blackgang Chine.
I'm sure there was a tiger that was stood very still at Blackgang Chine. You'll remember it. It's fallen in the cliff now, but...
Next week, you've got Harringay.
Harringay, London Races. Big clash, that's away.
It is a big clash. It's away, and when you go out there, remember to take the H off the front of Harringay.
We missed the opportunity to talk about the coastal erosion of the Isle of Wight there. I know loads about that.
Just different coloured sand, isn't it?
Yeah. And the big anyway, so we are here. We're going to talk about football in a minute. But anyway, let's introduce the panel. My name is Andy Roberts. Hello again. On my right, of course, is Selfie. Hello.
Thank you.
And James is here.
Hello.
James, tell everybody, this is James, Swiss Yellow. Tell everybody that's listened to the podcast how you were described on the internet.
Well, yeah, there's a news story with I was off in Seattle doing something and I got photographed and put on Tinterweb. And the second comment says, overweight and no hygiene, typical video gamer. I mean, you know.
I think it's wrong about the overweight, because as you see, I'm poorly as well, but the hygiene...
Yeah, fair enough.
The internet doesn't lie, though, does it?
No, it doesn't.
And also we have a special guest today, and it's Matt Bruce.
Bruce,
and he is the boys from up the hill, Fantastic Oxford United blog. So say hello.
Hello, everyone.
And yeah, so it's welcome aboard.
To Bluth. Right.
It is, as it says
on Twitter.
It is actually the Matt Bruce Award, so away you go, son. It's Scottish, by any chance, because Bruce has got that little...
You'd think so, but no.
Okay.
Not even a little bit.
Okay, here's your dad, Ken. He's so good. Oh, Ken, Andy, yeah. It's over to you.
It's over to me. Hartlepool. Well, we're all flying a bit blind here because Self is the only person that actually managed to get to Hartlepool, so he's going to talk all about that. First question that we asked Colin, our special guest last week, was, we were beaten by Chesterfield. How good were Chesterfield? So we went away, we beat Hartlepool. How rubbish were Hartlepool?
Hartlepool, I have to say, in the first 45 minutes were the worst side I've ever seen. They were the worst side I have witnessed in League Two football. But in the second half, I saw a worse side. And that was us for 25 minutes, because we actually got... But it was like the FA Cup, but in the league encounter, we descended to Hartlepool's level. We come away with a 3-1 win. I'm absolutely over the moon. Another coastal victory. Talking about coastal erosion there. Yeah. And I'm over the moon with it. You know, you've got to be happy. But I'm going to rejig my thought process. As the ladies come out the toilet in the background. I've got to rejig my thought process. I don't think this is a very good League Two. So I think our chances maybe getting a lot better.
So how many have we seen of the early contenders so far? I've seen Chesterfield.
Chesterfield, we obviously had that amazing first day away win at Pompey, who then go and got stuffed by York yesterday. That was a
well, they just find
real
it
surprise.
Very, very difficult, aren't they? But in fairness, when you saw the local the papers recently, they're paying for two squads, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
They've got the great squad that they're paying for that doesn't play, and the squad they've got at the moment.
Matt, of the games you've seen, who's the side that's impressed you most so far?
Well, I've only been to one game, so...
Bury, the best side you've seen this season.
They've been the best side we've played against all season.
But hang on, haven't you written a blog about every other game?
I've written very knowledgeably about everything, but I haven't actually seen any of it. I've watched a lot of Oxford City, but not so much Oxford United.
Right, okay. Well, let's just broach that, because City, another little theory on City in just a moment, they had a good cup win against Maidenhead yesterday from the Blue Square South, which is where I thought they should go, but that's another story. Talk about that later. How long have you been supporting the Mighty Yellows?
Since 96.
96, and I thought that was only a few years back, but when you sit down and think about it, that is 17 years ago, Andrew.
Holy cow.
Yes.
Yeah, that's quite a long time ago.
17 years ago, you'd have been 3?
No, I was 16.
And James...
Just 17 years since Three Lions on a Shirt.
17 years ago, and you would have still have been an unfit gamer back then.
let's get back on track. Let's talk about Oxford United. You say, Selfie, for a lot of the game yesterday we weren't enormously convincing, but the fact is we're winning our away games. I mean,
all right, let me give you a quick summary, because if Mr. Wilder hears this, he'll bend my ears from here to next week. First 45 minutes, we should have won the game.
There's no way Chris Wilder listens to this.
You'll be surprised. They troll the internet quite a bit. Him and his old buddy, KT, and the Sunshine Band. What I will just say is that first 45 minutes, we should have put it to bed. At halftime, it was a case of the biggest worry for me was if we don't come away with 3 points, it will be our fault. Mm-hmm. Because Hartlepool, in my opinion, was so poor. In the second sort of half, the first 20 minutes, we didn't get out of the right gear. We came out, they put us under a bit of pressure, and they had no right to because they're not very good. Then we came back to the party, terrifically well-crafted second goal, excellent play, taken coolly by Dean Smalley. Scotty Davis wins us a penalty late on. I've got video actually on my phone. I need to know how to get it uploaded from the fans, stood behind the goal. Because it was warmer there than in the commentary box, it was freezing out there. But that's another reason I can tell you about that. But generally, it was a good victory. And if I'm moaning on good victories, then I must be a sad old gear.
It was a fantastic result looking at all the angles. It was blooming miles away for a start. I mean, it's nearly in Norway, it's that far away. Right? We've got most of the team missing, so we've plugged the gaps with the kids. Right? So, and then we've got that. You know, we usually go to the northeast and we don't do very well. So we've got all these things against us. We've gone away, and we've come away with a 3-1 win yet again. It's just a tremendous start to the season in terms of away form. Absolutely fantastic.
Driving home, we drove past a sign. Now we've been on the road 40 minutes. That said, take the next turn and off to go to the north. Where were we? What's beyond north? That's what I wanted to know. I'm thinking, it said north that way.
Yeah.
Where have we been?
North.
We went to northern and north, which is just past Banbury.
Yeah, somewhere near Trondheim, isn't it?
Yeah, there, it's somewhere. A long way, Lillehammer.
The thing for me, fortunately, is because I was so jet-lagged, I completely missed the entirety of the second half up to when Dean Smalley scored. I mean, up to then, the only thing I knew about the second half was that I'd crushed a beef monster munch in my groin accidentally. So lots of crumbs everywhere.
That's a skill.
Yeah, it was a skill. It was a complete mess, which I forgot about until I walked out to the Chinese restaurant later in the evening.
So you went from monster munch to the Chinese, so the unfit game was really working.
The Chinese was for someone else. I was doing a favour. So I missed the whole sort of decline of our play in the second half. I mean, caught me by surprise, people looking at it on Twitter, catching up with Twitter afterwards. But
I've got to come across to Matt, you don't look great, you don't look stressed, you've been with us for 17 years. You know, it is a roller coaster of emotions in all our football matches, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's probably the most stressful experience every game. JPT, it's a nightmare.
Speaks a proper Oxygen United fan. I'm actually just you mentioned Twitter, actually, because that's one thing you do with your blog, isn't it, with the boys from up the hill. Talk about the things you do with the match and tweets thing you do.
Yeah, well, it takes about 15 minutes to read. It takes about 2.5 hours to put together. It is a bit much, but it's quite a good way of kind of capturing the fan experience of the day, that you kind of get the reaction to all the big events of the game and you know, some of those quirky little things that you have around the matches that people like to tweet about. Kind of, they get lost, don't they, after the day when they're when they've been tweeted about and other tweets being piled on top of them, they fade away a bit. So it's a good way of kind of preserving them and kind of giving people something to look back on as well a bit, I think.
I absolutely love it, and I recommend any Oxford fan to go and check it out, because it's hilarious after the game. Not only do you collate all the sort of factual stuff, but all of the general emotion and nonsense that goes around any Oxford United game is brilliant. So if anybody hasn't yet checked it out, make sure you do so. All the matches are there, and you may find your own tweets on there. It's a great little read.
It is great, and I just sort of very quickly explain what it is. Is that Matt on his blog, The Boys from Up the Hill, he'll go back through his Twitter timeline and pick out Oxford United related tweets from the build up to the game, including things like the announcement of the team, then the discussion of the team, and then from kick off to all the chat about the goals and a couple of the hashtag White Hogs, where I celebrated Oxford's goals stuff, and little bits and pieces and tweets all the way through the game, including the post match analysis. It's brilliant. I remember looking back on your blog and seeing one from the Wickham away victory. Was it the 3-1?
I can't remember. Beating them after a few minutes.
Yeah.
And then Craddock
just
half-time.
Right.
Oh.
And I remember looking at that, because that was, I think, was that after the wretched September? Or was it just ahead of the wretched September?
It was after the wretched September.
Because I remember like the post-match stuff, people were like, do you know what, I reckon we've got a real chance this season. It's like a week before that had been doom and gloom, and because one great result, and that just...
Oh, it was a good result.
Oh, it was a blinder. Yeah, and they perfectly encapsulated like how fickle we all are as football fans.
That doesn't sound right. Us Oxford fans, we go from relegation candidates to championship winners in a snap second of even attempt on goal. It's
fantastic. There was a classic song being sung by the Oxford fans to the Hartlepool fans yesterday. Is there a fire drill as they left? And this big, burly Hartlepool fan walked along and flicked the biggest single finger you've ever seen at everybody. But it was quite, you know, it is amusing. That moment, we've had it. We've had it at the Kassam, when there's that silence around three quarters of the ground and there's that little faint cheer from 150 away fans as they take the lead. And it's that, it just, your heart drops into the base of your pants, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, why can't... And at the moment, four away wins and a draw, we're doing that. We're the little single voice out there having a bit of fun.
And we've got to get that home form right. And we've been at the Kassam a long time, and the Manor was wonderful and it had all its negatives, but I don't remember, and again, I don't know if this is rose-tinted glasses, but I don't remember teams coming to the Manor when they've got important... It's an important game for them, and they're coming away with victories like they do at the Kassam. Gillingham, on the back of a 20-game losing streak a couple of seasons ago. Managers on the brink of being fired, yet they turn up at our place and grind out a victory for them. Just don't want that. We've got to start nailing that home form now.
Now, we spoke last week in the podcast last week about what we thought potential reasons for, I mean, not just this season, but just in the 12 years that we've been at the Kassam Stadium, why we've rarely, well, we've never really made it a fortress. We've rarely had any good home form. We spoke about why we think that is the case. What I thought would be quite nice to talk about is work out, if you're the manager, you're Chris Wilder, what the bloody hell do you do to change it?
I think it's a very difficult one, because you anticipate your players want to do their very best as soon as they cross the white line. You can only fire them up. I remember I was talking to the players about what happens. I'm trying to think who it was now. Spoke to one of the players about what happens in the change rooms those few minutes before you go into the tunnels. And he came across, he said there was one guy always doing his hair. There was, I won't say his name. He said there was one guy always doing his hair. No, because it's not fair. No, but the person doing his hair was Lewis Haldane.
Yeah,
Mr. Okay. Creosote himself, you know what I mean? He was touching the tan up and everybody else was like screaming, kicking things. It was Danny Bullman I was talking to, and he said, you all go about in your different ways. People are getting up, getting in face and everything else, and Lewis was there.
Danny Bullman can talk. Danny Bullman, straight after the game, doesn't matter how dirty he got his knees, his hair was perfectly coiffed.
Yeah,
afterwards.
But that was just because it was Lego hair. It was like Christie's, wasn't it? It was a wire brush.
I don't think our inability to capitalise on home form is down to players' hair, though, is it? Or are we going down the wrong...
I don't know. Maybe well, that's it.
I don't know, because they're worth it.
But to be fair, though, Chris Wilder... Chris Wilder did say to Alfie Potter, shave your beard off, you'll be better. And he scored, didn't he? So
I'm not against beards. I think beards are good.
I shaved mine off today.
You'll get one day, James. That's see through. Matt, come on, let's... sorry, I'm picking on the unfit gamer far too much. Matt, come on.
Matt.
So you pull all this together, you pull all the tweets together, and from that you can sort of, you know, you can show the whole scope of being an Oxford fan.
It shows every, you know, we're saying about how up and down fans are, and you'll see that within the space of about a minute's read, because the moment we'll go from sort of one of my favourite things to do is you'll find a tweet where someone has said we're never going to score or this player is useless, and I guarantee within five kind of tweets later they will have scored or Oxford will have taken the lead and It kind of shows how
total euphoria then goes on about just where we'll be in 5 years' time.
Exactly, it shows how ridiculous we all are as well. I think.
Well, I'm trying to pen the last year of the Big Banana, going back and revisiting old shows and the fun we had when we put it together, and it's going to be the Chronicles of a Nana Year, and it was quite one of the things I tried to get across is the intertwining story of the anticipation and the excitement of three men that should know better going up the road and the quaffing sweets in no time at all, feeling sick, to the plain depression on the way back, but also through the last season, the way the emotions of the club changed from a, you know, from a press call when you went there, how people were feeling, and it is quite, you know, it happens. They're all human beings, and that's the thing that we can say. The players don't turn up and go, oh, this is nice, isn't it? We're doing quite nice here. They know their jobs. The management know their jobs, and they send them out to do their jobs. But I just think that the Kassam is just too homely for away sides.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, isn't it? Matt, actually, one of your latest blogs was you were talking about, I think it possibly might have been about Potter and Rigg. You were talking about how Wythe can actually do Oxford a lot of favours this season. Now, we went back to the two wingers, albeit with Rigg and Williams up at Hartlepool, didn't we? Matt, I wonder maybe if you give us a little bit of a shout out how you think Oxford could use Wythe.
Well, I think we've seen kind of a few different teams who've done it quite well. I think, look at Port Vale last season. By all accounts, Chesterfield this season were another side who kind of, you know, they stretch the game, and I think even if the goals aren't coming from out wide, it's just the fact that you are pulling teams out there and it's creating space in the middle, and you know, better teams can deal with that easily. But League Two, I don't know. I think it seems to be a tactic that's quite successful at this level at the moment.
And I think we've looked at, I mean, when we went to Torquay, I think up until Rigg got injured, we had three across the middle, didn't we? And we were playing very narrow and we had very little impact on the game. Rigg went off, Ace Hall came on, we eventually dropped to a slightly more square four across the middle, and actually I think we caused them more problems because we had that extra width. Very, the trouble is we do have a tendency to play four central midfielders a lot.
Well, you know, very interesting point yesterday, we had the Australian that looks like a Sheila. Mr. Williams coming in off the right-hand side. We had Sean on the left, and we had Alfie playing in the hole just behind Dean Smalley. So three wingers on the field of play. We actually got very narrow. It was only Rigg that stuck to his task. Williams came in off the right.
Right.
Maybe a little too much, but maybe he felt he could go in and join in. Because the whole aspect of our game has changed. Last year we had Damien and Liam Davis bombing them from the full-back position. So there has been a complete... I agree with you, and if you think about the first 25 minutes against Pompey, they split us apart. They pulled us all over the place, playing wide.
Do you think, sort of, Oxford is renowned for wingers, you know, going back, Paul Simpson, Chris Yelling, Joe Beecham, etc., where fans much prefer us to play 4-2-4, or do you think it doesn't really matter how we play?
I'll go along with Chris Wilder here. The players will be detailed to do certain jobs when they haven't got the football. I think that will be across the land. That'll be the cross. I remember Ruud van Nistelrooy saying about Manchester United's, when he was up there, he said, what do you mean a 4-5-1? He said, that's only when we haven't got the ball. When we've got the ball, it's like a 4-2-4. And I think that a lot's made of, and I do concur with Mr. Wilder on this one, a lot's made of formations. A lot of it, though, with football, and you can do your shape work and whatever you want. Football is very natural, as is ice hockey, with the Stars leading out there against the White Link Warriors, Tigers, Raiders. Anyway, I'll get one of them in a minute. Peterborough Islanders, yes, Harrogate Racers coming up. But what I'm saying to you is that, you know, players will do what naturally happens. If the ball runs in, they'll find themselves sometimes attracted. We're talking of League Two footballers. Uh-huh. We've got a good bunch, an honest bunch.
Yep.
But what do you reckon, Matt?
Well, I mean, kind of looking back at the original question, I'm not sure there is a way of. I don't think there's an Oxford way. You know, some teams are kind of well known for this is the way that this team always plays, and, you know, and people kind of talk about, well, obviously
boring,
Barcelona.
Boring,
and,
no,
yeah.
West Ham Academy, that was smart.
Yeah, West Ham Academy, exactly. Yeah. But, like, you know, there are some teams where just in the DNA of the club,
yep,
they play in a certain way. I just don't see that with Oxford. I know that, you know, everyone always looks back to the Ian Atkins era as saying that is the antithesis of what Oxford is. But,
well, I think, you know, going on what you say there, that, you know, and there's, yeah, Ian Atkins built his side to play that way. Graham Rick's come along and tried to play him a different way.
Passing the ball out of defence.
Did not really work. Now, what, and I agree with you, and I think that when you look down at sides, a manager has to try and do, you know, pick a squad, buy a squad, mould a squad to fit the way. I don't think there's any designated way, because when injuries come along, you've got to have another option.
That's actually a good opportunity to bring up the debate that we fired up after our last podcast, because There was a little bit of chat about the fact that fans want to see entertaining football, mm-hmm. And that part of the reason the crowds are as low as they are at the moment is the fact that, you know, people are coming along and they're not being entertained. And that sparked up the debate about whether or not, you know, it's attractive football versus effective football, I guess. And whether or not, I mean, personally, I think winning is absolutely everything. I would take a really ugly victory over a pretty draw. But then, have you got a duty to try and bring people in through the gate? I mean,
yeah, you have, and I think it comes down for me. What would it want? You know, what do I want to see when I go and watch Oxford United at the Kassam? Is I want to see pace and attacking. I don't particularly care if, you know, that pace comes from Ryan, you know, hoofing a great big ball, you know, down a pitch, bounces a couple of times and you know, kicks and nods it in like he did at Cheltenham. But I just want to see pace, and I want to see a sort of speed to our play. Sometimes I get, well, not really a directness, I just want to see players with a bit of pace. And there's no criticism of players that we've got. We do, at the moment, home games recently, take the ball, control it, pass around, which possession is good, and I'm not saying that, you know, that's bad. From my own point of view, I'd want to see a little bit of pace. What I see as well is what if we get an away team come to the Kassam and they've not got a lot of fans, so they're not singing, and the atmosphere's flat in the stadium, in the home end, I'm absolutely praying for the referee to cock something up or call a foul against us, because that is as good as an opposition player running down to our end and giving a, you know, naughty sign at the Oxford fans. Everybody is up off their seat and it starts cheering and getting everybody, you know, a bit of hullabaloo.
A bit of hullabaloo in the
home end, and then we've got a focus for our attention, and we can start shouting against the referee, and then you get come on Oxford, and it sort of creates this atmosphere. But it's waiting for something on the pitch to do it. The fans will support the players, but they need something to happen on the pitch for them to hang their you know.
I will say two things, two quick points. Back in Ian Atkins' day, I wrote a page, an article in the programme, that was when I was in favour, and I literally wrote it along the headlines of That's Entertainment, a song by The Jam, brilliant song. And I said That's Entertainment because I'd rather read about a 1-0 win or a 2-0 win, and because that's what I want to read. If I see Oxford United 1, you know, Reading 3, I don't like it. It ruins my weekend. And that was under Ian Atkins, because there was many times under Ian Atkins when we went away and we won 1-0. But if you went away, you know, there were chances in the game that we hadn't put away. It wasn't great. It was long ball. It was a system of play that he played, but it got us towards the top of the table. We brought Graham Ricks in, who'd done a nice bit of passing and moving, and we got nowhere. The second point I will say, just to explode the myth, the mm-hmm. other morning I did Coritiba from Brazil mm-hmm. versus Itagüí from Colombia. Done a live commentary on a Copa Sudamericana Cup match. Brazilian football, fantastic. Never have I been so bored. The myth about Brazilians can play football was ruined by Coritiba. And so, you know, not everybody that has Inio at the end of his name is a fantastic ball player, because some of those can trap wind, let anything else. What do you think, Matt?
It's something I kind of veer from one extreme to the other on, in terms, you know, as far as my opinion goes. At the moment, I'm kind of feeling that, you know, if a team is set up to play in a certain way and it works, that's part of the game, and it's every bit as much, it's, you know, it's just as valid as a team that passes their way to a goal, and you know, it does take a certain level of skill. It is a good thing to do, but it's still not necessarily going to bring fans in, and it's not going to keep people on side.
It's not going to keep people on side, but I have to say, if you've watched 88 minutes of turgid football and you've got a chance of winning 1-0, I'll take it. Yeah. I'll take it. Do you know what I mean?
And actually, one of the things... Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, the stadium we play in at home is our stadium, and I love it to bits. It may be miserable, concrete, low, you know, soulless, modern stadium with three sides.
Don't sit on the fence, though, James.
But Oxford United plays there, and for that, it's my home. Yeah, don't go and sit on the other end, you can't. But the you know, we also had some terrible games with terrible atmospheres at the Manor. You know, it's a myth that the Manor atmosphere was just as good. I think it was easier to get a better atmosphere at the Manor because you could go and stand with your mates. And I think that is a problem that we have at the Kasam Stadium is
the
seating. Yeah, I'm covered in monster munch, they don't want to come near me. No, but when you go away, you can go, generally, most places, you can go and congregate and stand with other people who are singing and making a noise. And I think at the Kasam Stadium, we have got this issue that has to be addressed at some point where, well, you've got 10 guys over there who wants to sing, 2 guys down there who want, you know, this sort of dotted around seating, which if that was resolved, I'd hedge big bets that the atmosphere at the Kasam would improve if you were able to stand where you want. Now, there are issues around that, which you can and you can't do, security and whatever else, but that, for me, would then help the players on the pitch and come out with a better end product. In terms of pace, it may gee the players up a little bit.
Well, I think we've done sort of the atmosphere at the Kasam probably to death now, haven't we? So we'll move on. Southend coming up on Saturday. They had a great start to the season, didn't they? And then they've been pretty much wretched since then. So 1-1.
Well, let me open it up, and I'll go to Matt here because he can put his neck on the line for this one. It's Southend followed by Portsmouth in the JPT, followed by a home match which
Northampton,
followed by Aki away. Points total. What we get out of those three home those three league matches? What do you reckon?
Well, I can say one thing for sure: no points from Portsmouth.
That's true.
Yeah, I didn't actually add that one in there, but you know, you have a pop son, you have a pop, don't worry. Hey, you're new over there. Come on, right, so the no points at Portsmouth, how many points from the other three games?
Crossing his arms now,
all defence. What?
I do think we'll draw against Southend. I just.
Northampton, AD Boothroyd, Torrid Time.
Well, they're in poor form, it's the right time to play them. I think, no, we'll win that one there.
So that's 4 points, yeah, on Twacky.
Yeah, we'll win that one as well.
There so you're go. Looking for 7 out of 9, Andrew?
Yeah, I'd be happy with 7 from 9.
I think we'll probably get 9, but I also think we'll get none.
Jesus.
I'm an Oxford fan. I can see the negatives in every single one, okay. But I can also see the positives.
So here's a shout. Southend rolls around, okay. We have a miserable game. We draw 0-0, we draw 1-1. What do you do Tuesday, right? Johnson's Paint Trophy rolls around. We need something to give us a kick up the backside at home. Do you go, well, Pompey are probably likely to bring a slightly weakened side because it's the JPT. Do you stick a full team out there to try and just get a home win under your belts?
I think we look at budgeted, you know, finance here and go all the way and get £4,000 for winning it, you know? That would be the way. No, I think it's kids' time. I think it's off with the school blazers and give everybody a chance. And because we are in a very good position, Matt, at the moment, whether it's a great League Two or whatever, the boys are getting results. They're doing exceptionally good away from home. And I think it's time to get the other players out of the park.
Well, the difficulty with it is, obviously, the kind of the development team players haven't had a chance yet. And you know, I know there's been a lot of debate about it. But it's not a competition that we're necessarily interested in going that far in and winning. So why not give them a go and if any of them do well, then that's
and if
that's
we win it's a bonus
chance.
And we get Plymouth away on Tuesday night.
And that's it. And do you know what last week we were talking about, you know, when's the opportunity to chuck the kids out, and you got to say the JPT's that, right, James?
Yeah, I'd put a few of them in. I wouldn't necessarily make huge wholesale changes. You know, for me, I'm still, you're in a competition to win it. I know it's JPT, whether it's the Europa League or whatever, you've still got to be happy to be still in with a chance.
I'll be quite happy with the Europa League, I'll be honest.
Into time zone, don't we, sir?
We are due it, aren't we? It was taken from us.
But that's true.
You got, you know, I'll still be there. If we got to Wembley in the JPT, I'll still be there with a face paint, you know, drunk up the hill of the Green Man. It'll be a brilliant day out. So I'm all for it.
With the fans again.
Keep going.
Well, I think that'll do us. Anybody else? Any other business you want to add? Let's talk about.
We've just got to wrap up before we go any further. We've got to say about Boys from Up the Hill. Get onto the blog, read it. It's a great way of seeing you pull together everybody's thoughts and emotions on the day.
Do try. It would be nice if people would read it for a change. It'd be good.
But I mean, it's not just the match, is it? It's you also, you know, you give your thoughts on, you know, just general little articles about Oxford United and other Oxfordshire sport, don't you?
Yeah, I try. You know, I do a preview ahead of every game, and I try and write other stuff in there. And I don't want it to be just me writing it. It basically is just me writing it. But, other people can write for it as well. So
I've got nothing to do with my time. So actually, no, I've got GTA 5 now. So there's maybe when I've completed that, I'll write something.
I'm writing.
If you got your crayons, but
I never got English O level, so I have to do spell check an awful lot.
How can people find the blog?
Well, you can Google it. It's just The Boys From Up The Hill, or the address is theboysfromupthehill, all one word, .blogspot.co.uk.
What we'll do is we'll put a little link to it in the little description thing to the left hand side of
in the
this
show notes.
Podcast. The show notes. I like that.
Yeah. And one of the people that did go, and you're about to hear from him, Andy Wilmer was at Hartlepool. You'll enjoy what he has to say about the game.
And here is Andy Wilmer.
Joined by Andy Wilmer. Good to see you. Yeah. On the road again, another 3 points on the coast. Good stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first 20 minutes of the second half was a bit dodgy. I think it's a bit of a recurring theme in the last few games. First 20 minutes is dodgy and they seem to switch on. I don't know what the manager seems to say to them in the dressing room, but maybe it's a tactic. Maybe that's what he wants them to do.
You've got to say, your dad's just took a picture of my bald spot, which I'm not too impressed with. But you've got to say, when you look at it, Hartlepool weren't the best and they needed to be beaten. And at times, there was a little bit of a worry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first half they had nothing. They had a few runs down the left, but obviously we had that covered. And then the first 20-25 minutes of the second half, they were the better team. We'll put our hands up and say they were a better team, but the best team won at the end of the day.
It's going to be a tough year, isn't it? It's going to be a lot of sides have only got about 14 or 15 senior pros, aided and abetted by kids. You know, Hartlepool are one of those. They're sat at the wrong end of the table. How far do you think Oxford can go this season, having seen the games that you've seen?
That's a tough question. I mean, personally, playoffs is the minimum. Anything more than that is a bonus. I think if we're consistent, we can make the top three. But obviously, we've seen today, we've had a lot of players out, injured, played a poor team. But
you can only beat what's in front of you.
Exactly, right? Yeah, you can only beat what's in front of you. But at the end of the day, we've got 3 points. A win's a win, doesn't matter how it comes. And that's what matters over the course of the season.
And 3 points, going home, 4 hours in the car, it's got to be worthwhile having a chat about the good points.
Well, yeah, definitely. But it's only 15 minutes for me because my dad lives up the road. But yeah, for the rest of the fans, yeah, it's going to be it'll make the 4 hour journey back a lot easier, I think.
How good was that pint at half time?
Yeah, decent.
It was decent.
Yeah.
A decent pint up on the coast.
Bad, yeah, it is.
So we've got to take the seaside and games to for the Kassam. We've got to put some sea around the Kassam so we can get the points, because that seems to be where we thrive, in the sea air.
It does, yeah. I think we need to put a moat or something around it. Yeah, everybody knows the away form's been a lot better than the home form, and if we can just sort of turn the results away from home into results at home, there's no reason why we can't get playoffs.
A couple of big home games coming up that we need to make sure we get the points from.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, the home games is where we get the most of the fans. The home games is the games that people look at for us to get the wins. And if the wins start coming at home, the more fans are going to come back. So
350 fans just shy of. I did guess 350 before we come up, so it was 348. Always a good atmosphere with the away fans, isn't there?
Yeah, always. I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we've got the best following of away fans in League 2, which is a fantastic achievement, considering we're sort of 4 hours from home. So.
Is your dad, is he an ex-Oxford person living
up
here?
He is, yeah. He was born in Oxford. He supports Sunderland, actually. So.
Oh, yeah. He's happy because he's got rid of PDC. Got to be over the moon.
Exactly. Yeah. Anybody that gets rid of that manager's got to be happy.
Fantastic, Andy. Thank you very much.
Last time I saw Oxford was at the Manor Ground.
What was the score?
It was 2-1 and we beat Millwall.
And we've gone 3-1 there, so you've got to come again now. Every week you'll have to start again.
It's a long way to go.
Yeah, but your son's down there, so you can come down and have free food and a bed.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
There we are. Thank you very much, Mr. Wilmer.
Cheers.